Session number 10181.
Mr. Williams, reel 3.
Yet the thing that fascinated me about my first experience out of the front line was, especially at night, was incoming machine gun fire or rifle fire, was the crack of the bullets going overhead of the trenches. It was real whiplash crash cracks. I never realised that bullets made a noise as they passed over you like that. I thought they were just silent. I never thought they made a noise until they hit you or hit something. But it was quite an experience. In the end, you got used to it. They thought nothing of it.
Was this machine gun fire?
Or rifle fire. The same whiplash sound over your head as they're passing over.
Were you being shelled by artillery as well?
Yes. From a distance, yes. Being shelled, yeah. But very spasmodically. Because the front end was in a lull, was quiet. There'd been major battles before. Major battles. The battle for University City and all that. All those battles were just tapering off when I got there.
And what about air power? Was there much activity in the air?
Not at that particular time. I come here to the end of the Battle of Karama, the battle for University City. I was at the end of that, the last fortnight, where it was a lull period, was tapering off.
You'd been in the British Army for several years, and so you'd seen British Army organisation.
Yes.
How did it compare, how did the Telman Battalion compare with what you'd been used to from the British Army?
Oh, the British Army was total discipline. The emphasis seemed to be on discipline. Never mind what you do or how you do it, but do it in a disciplined fashion. Discipline. The thing was left, right, look straight ahead of you, don't think for yourself, do as you're told. But in the theme, my first experience of the theme, well, this don't make sense to me. Everybody seemed to do what they wanted to do. But everybody seemed to be doing it in a good and willing fashion. There didn't seem to be any problem of people doing a job of work. And they were, the order shouted, nothing like that. And that was a big thing I found the difference. Difference was total lack of discipline. But things were still being done.
Which did you prefer?
Well, in the beginning, I would have preferred discipline. I knew where I was. But a few weeks, and I began to like the attitude of being willing to do it without being told to do it. I began to like that attitude. In the beginning, no, I would have preferred to have been told what to do, not to have to do it myself.
Did the Germans have a specifically German way of going on, which stood out?
Yes, they seemed more curt. They seemed more disciplined than I was. Well, I was the only Englishman there anyway, so I could only judge for myself. But what you must remember, that these were not the German Nazi. These were German refugees. These were people that escaped from Hitler. These were German refugees that had gone to fight Hitler, more or less. So this was a German that was there willingly, voluntary. And he couldn't go back to Germany anyway. So this is a different type of German than the German that we think of in the German army.
Were there any Jews amongst them?
I should imagine there were. I wouldn't know a German Jewish name from an Italian Jewish name.
What about the equipment which they had? How did that strike you after the British Army?
Oh, very, very. There was no equipment. Theoretically, there was no equipment. The old-fashioned rifles, no equipment. Very little equipment. Just elementary equipment.
Did the Germans sing songs?
No, can't remember them singing songs at that particular time. No.
Was there any political content in terms of political instruction or political commissars?
I think there was political commissars with them, but because I didn't understand the language, and I was a little isolated unit on my own, I had very little to do with that section of it. The political commissar came to see me once or twice, and he was very good. He brought cigarettes up and he brought more bandages for me and things like that.
I can't understand how just you and your other comrade could cope with all the medical work for a whole battalion.
Not much. The only medical work we ever done the whole time I was in Spain was dealing with the wounded. Never did I see a man go sick with a flu or with a cold or with an ingrowing toenail. I never saw that. My whole experience in Spain, the only casualties or man I ever saw leave the front line was a man that was wounded by the battle.
And were they serious wounds or trivial wounds?
No, the majority of them were serious wounds.
What?
Not in Jarama, in other battles now, but not in very few serious wounds are treated in Jarama. In other battles, yes.
So, as far as the Telman battalion was concerned, you just couldn't speak to them at all?
No.
You were totally isolated?
Pardon?
You were totally isolated.
Totally isolated.
No other British people there to
speak to? No, only myself. Nobody else at all.
Were all the others Germans, do you think?
All Germans, yes. Totally German, all Germans. And there was the odd Spaniard flying in. One time I had a Spaniard as a stretcher bearer. It was an odd Spaniard come in.
Were there any villages nearby?
El Escorial, yes. It was a more semi-built-up area. You know, it was farmstead, little villages around, yes.
And were there civilians about?
No. They were all away.
Did you know which units were on either side of
No. I knew the British battalion was to one side, but I understood that they were being pulled out just when I got there. I knew the British battalion was on one side, because I wanted to try to get there, but I didn't know quite where they were.
Did you know what kind of enemy troops were in front of you?
Yes, Moors. I only knew that from hearsay. I didn't know myself. I heard people say, Moros.
What was the attitude towards the Moors?
They were intimidating. We'd rather have Spaniards opposite us than the Moors. It was rather intimidating to think you were on the Moors. As we got used to things, I mean, they became neither here nor there then.
What was so intimidating about the Moors?
Well, because apparently the Moors were very trained. They were Franco's elite troops.
So you were pulled out after a relatively short time.
That's right.
You said Tarazona?
I went to a place called Tarazona, that's right.
What was the setup there?
The Tarazona, that was the headquarters of the 15th Brigade of the English-speaking battalions.
Why did you go there?
Well, I don't know. I was sent there. The political commissar of the Talman Battalion one day told me I was to go to the headquarters of the 15th Brigade. And I went out with a couple of other people and I went in a truck and went to Tarazona. And when I was in Tarazona, I was sent to an office in the village. And there I met an Englishman. I don't know who he was. I think it's by the name of Alec Cummins. That's right, Alec Cummins as well.
What did he say to you?
He asked me a few questions, how long had I been there? And I told him. And he said, well, where would you like to go? And I said, I'd like to go with the British battalion, wherever they were. And he said, well, he gave me a little form to... And he filled in a little form. He said, go here, some streets down there. And I went to the street and there was a kind of a little hotel, a little billet. And he said, stay there, they'll feed you and eat you there. There was other soldiers there as well. I stayed there for 2-3 days and then he came to see me there in this billet. And he said, there's a new battalion being formed of Americans, the George Washington Battalion, and you have been sent there. So there was this little village outside Madrid called Mondeja, where the George Washington Battalion, a lot of Americans came over, and they were forming this battalion, and I was their first aid man.
Was this still in March, or had we...
This was April. It's about April now. Dates now become very confused on me. Days become very confused.
What was the situation at Mondeja?
Oh, it was quite a comfortable little village. The natives there, I don't suppose they'd ever seen a foreigner in their life before. It was a real peasant village. And the Americans, the International Brigade, had taken over quite a few houses, whatever billets or barns they were. And the American battalion was billeted all around and in the village.
Were they as strong in numbers as the Italian
yes,
battalion?
Yes, the Washington battalion was about 1,000 men strong. Yeah, about 1,000 men strong, yes, all of that.
How did they compare with the Talmans?
Well, it was entirely different. I could speak their language. I was English. I felt more at home with them because they were English. But I'd never met an American before in my life. I'd never smoked an American cigarette in my life. I'd never eaten American food in my life. They seemed to have brought the whole of New York with them there. They had American cigarettes, American food. I never saw anything in my life. I never lived so well all the time as with the Washington Battalion. Truckloads of cigarettes they brought over with them. Everything. Lucky Strike. I never smoked Lucky Strike before. I smoked Lucky Strike. And they were a real great lot. I enjoyed myself with the American. Different language. I never heard son of a bitch before. I thought, what the heck do they mean by son of a bitch? I heard swear words I'd never come across. It was a new world, a brand new world. I was suddenly transported from Berlin to New York. Complete, total.
What was so special about American food?
Well, I hadn't eaten. I mean, they were eating hamburgers and things like that. I never had tasted hamburger. Oh, and strange. Everything was strange.
How had they got this American food across?
Well, they used to come over in convoy. They brought their own trucks, a lot of trucks with them. You know, they brought camions, as the Spanish would call. They brought a lot of trucks. They brought ambulances and all. And they were all always full of stuff. Coming over.
What was their caliber as a fighting unit?
Well, the people I met, they were really super people. I met some marvellous people in Spain, some of the most wonderful people I met in my life. They were great people. And lots of Americans were rather idealistic. They seemed really idealistic. They knew what they were there for. A lot of them, not all of them, but most of them knew. Or they thought they knew what they were there for. They were Bandera Rosa people, no question about that. They thought they were there. It was quite a few Negroes. Even that was an experience. I don't think I'd ever spoken to a Negro before. I was speaking to a Negro, and he was speaking to me, and he was speaking in English. All right.
Did you have any political discussions with the American troops?
No, not really, not really. Everything seemed to be a potpourri of everything, talk about everything. They were interested in me, where did I live, this and that. I was interested in them. How did I get there? How did they get there? It was a very comradely feeling, very friendly atmosphere. No, I can't say there was any political argument or political talks or political fights or... No, there was nothing like that. No, no, nothing at all. It was an ordinary army of nice people.
What did you learn from what they told you about how they'd got there?
Oh, a lot of them came over in tourists. They were all tourists. Every one of them was a tourist on the Queen Mary or something like that. They were all tourists. All tourists, all tour in Europe.
So they seemed to be better off people.
Yeah, well, they had more funds to come over. That's apparently. They were good collection system on the other end. They had, and also they brought a lot of ambulances over with them. Lots of things like that with them. First doctor I met in Spain was an American, a fellow by the name of Dr. Sollenberger, and he was a nice fellow. It's the first doctor I met, and he was the brigade doctor for the American battalions.
How did he spell his name?
Sollenberger, Sollenberger. Sollenberger.
Did he know his stuff?
He was a young man. I think he hadn't long come out of medical school. He was a young man. He was a very young man because I had a lot to do with him in the Battle of Brunete. A lot to do with him in the Battle of Brunete. He was a young man. He was as frightened as I was, bless his heart. As frightened as I was.
So when you arrived with the Washington Battalion, they weren't fighting?
No, they were being formed. They were being formed. And they were being formed April, end of April, May, that's right. And then from April, May to June, I think it was, you know, dates are very confused. April, May, June, everybody was training and doing manoeuvres and the usual army stuff with a certain amount of discipline, but also a lack of discipline. It was an easy atmosphere. No shouting, no bawling. If people had to do this, they would do it and things like that. And there was a lot of training going on, a lot of crawling and in ditches and fences and like that. And I was had a lot of stretcher bearers, how to open a stretcher, how to close a stretcher.
So and you like were that. Training people?
Yes, yes.
You were passing on your
yes,
knowledge?
Yes, that's right. And that's where I was made a sergeant by the Washington Battalion.
How much actual military and weapons training had you had in the British Army?
None. I never handled a rifle all the time I was in the British Army. Never handled a gun. Never saw a revolver.
It was solely medical in the British
Army? Solely medical. Most of my life in the British Army was in Edinburgh Hospital as a nursing orderly, as a male nurse.
Was the equipment which the Washington Battalion had any better than that which the Telmans had?
No. It was all Spanish equipment, but by that time there was some different kind of rifles being issued. There were some new rifles coming in. I don't know what make they were or anything, but there were some rifles coming in. There was some new equipment coming in. There was new machine guns coming in. First time I'd seen machine guns on wheels and things like that. New machine guns. There was a lot of new equipment, but not. There was a new equipment, full stop, and not a lot of it, but there was new equipment.
Were you having any more contact by this time with Spaniards, Spanish civilians?
Yes, a lot of contact with Spanish civilians. You know, you had a lot of free time now because the battalion was out, not fighting. They were in the village and talking to Spaniards, going to the local bistro at night, talking, trying to scrounge food off them, eggs, sort of things like that.
What did the attitude of the Spaniards you came into contact with seem to be towards the war?
As far as we were concerned, they were very, very kind to us, very pleased to see us, you know. Oh, Franco, el fascista, malo, you know. The enemy was bad. We were good. We were friends. We were great.
So none of them showed any resentment at your presence?
None at all. They were all very kind, all very pleased, all very nice. There was one family there. I remember one family. I was watching them passing down the village there one day. I was watching her milking goats. She had half a dozen goats or something. And she saw me milking these goats. I was watching her milking. I'd never seen a goat being milked before. And she's milking these goats. And she went in the house. She came up with a glass. And she filled the glass for her. And she gave it to me. And then in her own way, asked me, would I take a glass of milk? And I drank a glass of goat's milk straight from the udder. Beautiful.
How long was it before the Americans became involved in the fighting?
That's right. The first battle the Americans were in, George Washington, and the Lincoln Battalion was in the Battle of Jarama. Now, that was the Lincoln Battalion. I didn't come in contact with them for a while. I came in contact later on with them, but not with the at that time. The Americans had been in the war from almost the beginning with the British Battalion. But the Washington Battalion was a brand new battalion. There are two battalions, the Americans, the Lincoln and the Washington, you see. The British Battalion only had the one battalion. And the Lincoln Battalion had been in the front in Jarama for quite a while, in the bulk of the fighting there. But the Washington Battalion was a brand new battalion, hadn't seen any fighting at all.
Were you with them when they were in combat?
Yes, I was with the Washington Battalion, the whole Battle of Brunete.
How did it start as far as you were concerned, the Battle of Brunete?
An air bombardment, and then a big artillery bombardment.
Whereabouts exactly were you at Brunete?
At Villa de Nueva and Brunete itself. Villa de Nueva Cañada, that's the correct name, right? Villa de Nueva Cañada, and a place called Brunete.
Can you describe what the fighting was like there?
Diabolical. That's my first real experience of battle, of dead men and wounded men. It was at the Battle of Brunete, where the Washington Battalion was in there. We were in the first casualties we had was we were in a big what's those corn in the cob aside? We were in a big corn in a cob cornfield, waiting to go to the battle itself. The fighting Spaniards had started the bombardment. The Spanish battalions went in. And the Washington Battalion was in reserve. And we were in this big cornfield, hiding in the cornfield. And the aircraft came over and bombed this cornfield. They must have thought somebody was in there. And that's the first casualties I had, was the first carriage the Washington Battalion had was in this cornfield. And there was a lot of screaming and howling and crying and shouting. And there was about four or five people were killed there and about a dozen or so badly wounded.
Were you and the other orderlies able to cope?
I was the only orderly, and I had these stretcher bearers. I was able to cope, yeah. Man, it's all right. Bandaged them up and pushed them back in stretchers, and the other people took them right back to the field ambulance.
What did you lack in the way of drugs and equipment?
Well, in the end, no morphia. There were no injections. That's the only thing. And water, lack of water.
So your morphia just ran out?
Absolutely ran out. In the Battle of Brunete, it ran out the first hour. First hour in the Battle of Brunete. You must remember, I was the only one. I was the only one in the Boche battalion. And the field house was about 4 or 5 miles away. 4 or 5 miles away. More than that, possibly.
So once your morphia ran out, what could you give us?
Nothing at all. He was lying there. I would have done my best to stop the bleeding. Tried to got him in a safe position. And he just laid on the ground, dying. Or if the stretcher bearers could get to him in time, they would take him back and he might have been all right. But most of them, they were, I would say the greater percentage, more than 50%, died within a matter of an hour.
Could they have been saved with morphia?
I doubt it. They could have been relieved of the pain, but they soon lapsed into it. It's a strange thing, a wounded man. He's a strange animal. A badly wounded man is the less concerned person you ever meet. He's very, very quiet. Terribly quiet. Never says a word. You just bandage him up. He looks at you and he doesn't say a word. He might say he's thirsty. That's all he'll ask for, a drop of water. And you just put him one side, never heard him complain, no moans. A badly wounded man is the most silent person you'll ever come across, next to a dead man.
So which is the...
The lightly wounded people, they kick up a fuss. I want to get out of this, I'm going to lose my arm, I'm going to lose my leg, I'm going to die. They kick up a fuss. You can ignore them. You just banish them up and, you know, treat them kindly and say you find your own way back and da-da-da-da-da. But a badly wounded man, he knows he's at it.
Who are the people who start screaming then?
Well, you find the people that start screaming, those who maybe had a nasty flesh wound or something, and you can see lots of blood and you don't know what's happening to him. And he's terribly frightened. And, oh, I'm going to lose my arm. Oh, do something quick. And so I can't do anything quick. You, as your band is, yeah, you find your own way back. You get out of it as quick as you can and the best way you can.
But the badly wounded people just...
The badly wounded people, they wanted to be left alone. And you wanted to leave them alone because you knew that unless you could get them back quickly enough, You might say, man, if he's had his leg badly shattered, he will have stopped the bleeding. I stopped the bleeding with tourniquet. You might say his leg was shattered. He's going to lose his leg anyway. But the shock and living on his own there for an hour, 2 or 3 hours, you knew his chances of surviving back in the field ambulance wasn't going to be very good. If we could get him back in time, or if he'd survive getting back in time.
Did you have what might be called psychiatric casualties?
Yes. Well, I would say that every man that was wounded was a psychiatric casualty. He wanted to get out of it. Never mind how brave he was, never mind how philosophically sound he was or how idealistic he was. He was wounded, he wanted to get the hell out of it. The psychology of a wounded man is, let me get out of it.
But did you have any people who suffered what you might call a nervous breakdown?
No, I never saw nervous breakdowns as such. I wasn't the medical man to know what a nervous... Sorry, I wasn't the medical man to know what a nervous breakdown was. But I saw people that were very, very frightened. I saw people that were terrified. And you can call those, they were nervous breakdowns. And there was nothing to be done for those people. They had to fight that battle themselves. And, you know, they were living with other people, they were seeing other people being hurt, seeing other people being wounded. And, they were Oh, yeah, they were, you could say they were psychological cases, but I don't think they were from a totally mental point of view. I think they could cope. I think they were could cope if they could somehow or the other bring themselves around.
What symptoms would they show when they were very
frightened? They wanted to get out. They didn't know, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? I didn't think it would be like this. I didn't think anybody was trying to kill me. I was trying to kill them. I didn't know he was going to try to kill me.
People talk about shell shock. Did you see that?
No, I never saw anybody that was, shell shock. I saw people that were frightened. I don't know whether a frightened man is a shell shock man. I don't know. But everybody gets frightened at times. I was as frightened as anybody. There was nobody more frightened than I was. So was I shell-shocked? I don't know, but I had a job of work to do and I kept on doing it. I would like to have run out of it. But I was there to a job of work. If I got killed, it was just one of the things that happened. I was as frightened as anybody. And everybody was frightened as the next man. So if a man said he was frightened, he was only talking to a man that was equally as frightened as he was. So there was nothing new to anybody.
Would people desert from the front line?
No, no. I never saw anybody desert from... I saw hundreds that would like to have deserted, but I never saw anybody pick up his gear and run.
So you didn't see people having to be kept there at pistol point?
No, sir. No, sir. I never saw anybody that was compulsory kept at the front. Never.
When the Battle of Brunete started, how long were the Washingtons under fire for at first?
3 days. Full 3 days. Full 3 days, fighting, going forward, full 3 days, taking casualties, scrambling forward. And it was in June and July. It was in the blazing sun. It was hot, stinking hot. It was hot. And that was one of the things, one of the major things I couldn't cope with was lack of water. A wounded man, first thing he asked for, that's a lot, but he wants water. And that was the most dreadful experience of my life, was not able to give them water. No water. You see, the Spanish army was an amateur thing at that time. Amateur, had no water trucks, nothing at all. No, nothing to follow up. There was a big battle going on. All they knew, there were people being shot at and killed in the front line. They didn't know how to get them back. They didn't know how to get rations up to them. They didn't know how to get them water. Nothing. No organization at all. None whatsoever.